From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Hey, welcome to Studio 22. My name's Tyler, and we're so glad you're joining us today on Servcast. Following his chapel address, Lee alum Matt Sharp sat down with William to discuss leadership and calling. We really enjoyed this discussion, and we're really happy to share it with you. And that's coming up next.
Welcome to Servcast in Studio 22. My friend Matt Sharp is here with us, Lee alum, and now you're an attorney in Buford, Georgia. Is that right, Matt?
That's right.
So who do you work with and what do you do?
So I work with a group called Alliance Defending Freedom. We are a nonprofit Christian law firm that focuses on keeping the door open for the spread of the gospel. And so we defend religious liberty, we defend pro-life issues and traditional family values throughout courts across our country.
Great. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about that. But before we get to that, this is a follow-up today from the chapel you spoke in Lee University. And if folks want to hear that story, man, what an amazing, transparent story. We're not going to unpack that totally today, but can you give us the gist real quick of the whole Cain thing? And there were three principles that you shared today. Do you remember those and what you talked about? Not necessarily all the details. We don't have time for that on this particular podcast. Plus, they need to go listen to that. But isolation was one of those, and there were a couple of others. Do you remember those?
Yeah, isolation as part of Cain's dealing with the anger he went through is just sort of that isolation off by himself. He also was trying to justify his sin that, hey, God treated me wrong. He didn't accept my offering. And then finally, this sense of shame of that sin thrives in our shame and trying to get us to sort of wallow in that and just sort of looking at Cain's story and seeing parallels in my own life of some sins I struggled with and God taught me a lot through those principles.
When I sat there and heard you today, man, I'm telling you, this is like a neon sign was just blinking above your head. You know, there's hope. There's hope. I think all of us struggle at some point in our journey, and I think the reality is we're probably going to struggle again. But you talked a lot about community and that we're never really intended to walk this journey by ourselves. Now, you were here at Lee, and you were involved in a number of SLC. Tell us what you did when you were a student at Lee.
Yeah, so a lot of different things. I was involved in the Student Leadership Council all 4 years here, and one of the most impactful things I've done of that principle of Christ-centered servanthood that Mike Hayes and others taught us was involved in life at Lee and involved in academic stuff with the business program, but more than anything, just blessed by a lot of great people that poured into me that really helped shape me and provide that sense of community that really played into me becoming an attorney even.
And then later on in your life, and you shared that in the chapel, and again, you know, if they want to watch that, they can catch it on YouTube, but you shared in the chapel, you know, that through the difficulties of life, that there comes a place that we have to really make a decision and say that, you know, today we're going to stake our flag here and we're going to move forward.
Yeah.
And
Jesus makes it very simple. He says, you know, if your right eye offends you, gouge it out. And we have to have that same adherence, that same radical obedience sometimes, of that if there's some sin, something that's entangling us, we have to be willing to cut it off at that moment, not delay, not wait a minute or an hour, but to really take those serious actions. And in my own life, by the grace of God, I did that. And I would just always encourage people, be willing to do it. It's a sacrifice worth making.
Good deal, Matt. And thank you for reminding us today that no matter who we are, where we're at in the journey, God wants us in relationship with Him. And, you know, man, that was a powerful, powerful illustration. All right, we'll move forward from that, because I think what you do in the professional world, you know, of being a lawyer and defending freedoms and those types of things are real important. So give us another snapshot of exactly what does it mean, you know, for you guys to defend freedoms, and what is that looking like in real life?
I'm going to use a story to do it. So one of our clients, Baronelle Stutzman, she's a florist in Washington State, devout Christian woman that has served her community and served people and developed great relationships throughout the years. She had a longtime customer. His name was Rob Ingersoll, who was a homosexual man and in a relationship. And she had a great friendship with Rob, loved the challenges that he would bring to her. He'd bring a new vase and ask her to design a floral arrangement. Rob one day comes in and says, Baronell, I'm getting married to my partner. I want you to do our wedding. And Baronell said, Rob, you know, I love you and be happy to sell you the raw flowers or something like that. But to be a participant in your wedding would violate my convictions. She thought that was the end of it. Next thing you know, she's being sued by the state of Washington, both personally and for her entire business, because she declined to do that. We defend her case. We're wanting to protect that right of religious freedom of every American to be able to live consistent with their faith. So that's what we're seeking to do, is make sure that that first freedom that our founding fathers wrote into our Constitution is always preserved.
Mm-hmm. And we know that's going to fly in the face of some people, and I understand that. You know, and the reality is that we want to care for all persons, and we want to make everybody know that they really matter to God. You know, but in your business, in what you do, it's preserving that right of religious freedom and making sure that that people have that privilege.
Yeah, and what's really interesting with Baronell's story, I mean, just a Christian model. She employed gays and lesbians. She'd served them throughout the years. She wanted to serve anybody, but there's certain lines we all have that God puts in our lives and says, you can't cross that line. And this was hers. And what we just want is the freedom of every American to never be forced to cross that line, whatever it is for them.
Good deal. So other stuff that you guys are doing, you know, there's a couple of big cases. We probably don't need to give all the names to it, you know, but what does it look like in a daily life for somebody like you and what you're doing?
So it's a lot of keeping up on the latest developments. This is a changing area of the law and a lot going on. So in addition to the cases of hearing situations that pop up that we need to reach out to, sometimes it's a elementary school student that we found out had their Bible club shut down by a school administrator or something along those lines. We want to intervene, reach out to them, offer legal assistance to them, try and resolve things where we can. And we've had great success of used to work with school districts, and we'd come in and say, this is what the law, you've got to protect these religious rights. And a lot of times it was just that education that would solve a lot of things. So it's a lot of sort of keeping up with developments, but also making our clients' cases, help tell a story. We're working in a culture that is often hostile to our Christian faith and that views it as backwards or bigoted or other things. And we are needing to tell the stories to show our faith compels us to love everybody, but it also compels obedience to Christ. And those are not in conflict. You can love everybody, but still have to draw those lines. And so it's helping our culture understand what it really means to be a Christian, what our faith compels, and why religious freedom is so important to everyone.
Now, this isn't the company you pursued or you started to enter with when you finished, you know, law school at Vanderbilt. You went a different route. So maybe for our students who are thinking, man, they've got this thing mapped out, they're ready to go forward, what are some lessons that they need to learn about how to process, you know, this journey of a career choice? And when you find yourself in something that you no longer necessarily agree with or want to do, how do you make that shift? And where does God play in all of that?
I started with a firm in Nashville that we did corporate law, employment law, and some other things like that, and had a very devout Christian attorney that I worked for there, but slowly got this sense that that's not what I was supposed to be doing. When I felt like I was helping rich people sue each other over money, or I had one story where I was defending a client that had a pit bull that got out and attacked another dog, and you come home at the end of the day saying, this is not what I'm supposed to do. And my wife and I really approached it with a lot of prayer, of saying, God, you led me to this career, so many circumstances, including here at Lee, of people guiding me towards becoming an attorney. So I knew I was in the right career, but just not at the right place. And as we sought God, out of the blue, I got an email from this group. I had done an internship with them when I was in law school, saying, we've got this position in Georgia. And my wife, we fasted and prayed about it 3 days until we really got a peace. Mm-hmm. And the thing I take from it is, God does not work in confusion or in mysteries. He always has a plan, and it's our responsibility to be open and sensitive to that. And whenever we are seeking Him, He's going to let us know when it's time for that career change. He's going to open the right doors and make it possible.
Mm-hmm. So for a student here that's, you know, you were a business major here, and then we went on to law school. Mm-hmm. So what advice do you give students on while they're in college trying to figure that career? I mean, did you know that when you landed at Lee University what you were going to do with your life?
No.
You know, did that just kind of evolve through the journey of 4 years? What advice can you give to students on how to find out what maybe they're supposed to be doing, and what, you know, what has to come into play to make you know this is the kind of career I want to do?
I started off as a chemistry major, actually. Got into that and hated it. Explored some other options, but really took about 2 years where I was getting my basics out of the way and taking some of the intro classes until I stumbled into business. It wasn't really my first choice, but just felt like a good fallback opportunity, a fallback degree. And it was through that that I took a business law class that a professor here spoke into me and said, hey, have you thought about pursuing a degree in law? Hmm. What I always tell people is there sometimes feels so much pressure, like you're supposed to have it figured out by your freshman year. I didn't. I'm still figuring it out, but even I didn't know law school until my last semesters when I decided to do that. I didn't know I'd be doing religious liberty work until 3 years after law school. It's okay to not know, and it's okay to explore things. And that's what I always tell people is find something that sticks with you, that you feel you're good at, that you get excited about preparing for. And to me, that's the way God a lot of times speaks to tell you what you're supposed to do. It's just that excitement that you have that doesn't come with other degrees.
So let's talk back just a moment from what we were mentioning a moment ago about that. Let's say you're in a career and you don't have a clear word that you need to go somewhere else. You know, you're working in a good career. You're, you know, living for God, but you're not settled and you think there's something else. You know, how do you maintain your sense of responsibility of doing good in the midst of something that you're not really content with at that moment?
I've always viewed the calling we have above all else is a calling to excellence of wherever we're at. Oh. That even when I was at my firm before and was not happy there, I wanted to be excellent in what I do. Because the moment I stop, the moment I give anything less than my best, I'm dishonoring God with my talents. And even if it's not the right fit, you keep doing that and you see the dividends later. Because the experiences I got, even at that firm that I didn't love what I was doing, of learning how to be a good litigator, learning how to develop clients, all of that prepared me when I got into this field of defending religious liberty. Those skills paid off. And so to have that, I'm going to pursue excellence wherever I'm at. If it's scrubbing floors, and I'm going to do it well, because God is preparing you for something later. And if your excellence now is going to be rewarded down the road.
So let's unpack for a few minutes before we end our time today on this episode. Going back to chapel for just a minute. And I guess folks will need to, you know, catch chapel to be able to understand the details of this. But there's a couple of leadership theories out here called transactional and transformational leadership. I'm sure you're familiar with those, but for those that are listening, transactional really deals with the exchange relationship, you know, maybe a kind of an extrinsic motivator, you know, between a manager or a leader and a follower, whereas, you know, transformational deals more with the relational side of that. And, of course, Kuzis and Posner and that crowd talk about, you know, five strategic ways in which we can, you know, be exemplary leaders. And one of those, you know, is the whole idea of inspiring a shared vision and being able to motivate people to do what is right and how to make those right choices and right decisions. Today in chapel, your transparency really spoke largely to the idea of this transactional exchange this transformational exchange that happens between, you know, a manager and a leader and accountability partner. So what might you say to other people in business, in leadership, in professions, in the workforce? You know, you're struggling in one particular area. It doesn't really matter what that is. It matters that you're struggling. How do you reach out and find somebody? And what's the value of an accountability partner in that relationship? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I can't underestimate the value of an accountability partner. I've benefited them from my own life. And in terms of finding one, what I've always found is there's always people in your life that you tend to get really good advice from. That's really God-given advice. That when you're going through a difficult time, you go to them, and their advice has consistently proven itself to be trustworthy. Those are the people I would say look to for as an accountability partner. They're the people that God is already using in your life, and you need to keep that relationship going. There's a reason that they were placed there. And so in my life, it was my dad for a long time that he was used in that manner. Now I've got a good friend at my church that, again, God has used and just out of the blue would come and speak to me sometimes. And it was God's way of saying, this is the guy you need to trust and look to that too. But also, even as a leader, I do think accountability, but also transparency, I think is important even to the people below you. I think I've always liked and desired to follow leaders that I can relate to. If you get a leader that just seems they're perfect, they've got no flaws, it's hard to relate, because then when you're struggling, you don't feel like you have the comfort to go to that person and be honest with them because they seem untouchable. And I think to have that transparency, and I've always tried to do it with the people I work with, when they go through those tough times, they can relate and say, I know Matt's been through that as well. I know he's gone through tough times and that he's not going to judge me. He's not going to, you know, dock me or mark me down in my employment survey or something like that because of the difficulties I'm going through. And I think that creates a stronger bond and loyalty among coworkers when you have that transparency, because you're not just a figurehead. You're not just a leader, but you're really someone that's been in the trenches, is willing to walk with them and go through those struggles with them.
And this is so different than what we see in you know, many corporate settings in the world. So what are some practical steps to tell a leader right now that might want to know how do they protect that very needed resource in their business, you know? So, because once the person is transparent, it reveals a lot of stuff that, you know, they may not even know how to unpack or deal with. You know, what are some real practical steps for a leader right now to create that community? I know you're aware of that. How does that happen? What do they need to do to create that community of care and compassion and accountability in their business?
I think it's first and foremost to lead by example, is that when the leader takes the first step and shows that transparency, shows that level of accountability, that not only that those under him are accountable to the leader, but also that the leader holds himself accountable to those under him. I think that opens the door to create that community. It's a long process. It's not going to happen overnight, and it takes a lot of intentionality. But it is always through the leader taking those first steps and saying, you know, let me tell you something I've gone through and what I've learned from that and how that can benefit you and what you're going through, and to create an environment where there is no fear of being open and honest, I think is important as well. One of the great things of where I work at is that there is that environment. I mean, there's a freedom to, you're going to make mistakes. We're all going to, and you're not in constant fear of, if I make a mistake, I'm going to lose my job. Rather, they say, you know what, if you make a mistake, fess up to it, take ownership. We're going to tell you the mistakes we've made, how we learned from them. That's how we grow together as Christians. That's how we grow together as lawyers and in our legal organization. So I've benefited from having people create that environment, but it was very intentional on their part.
You made a statement today in chapel. You said, when we get an accountability partner, shame no longer has control over us. Yeah. Now, what a powerful statement. For that person who's trying to figure out whether or not, again, trust is a risk survived, or Fred Gary Riggins defines that, trust is simply a risk survived. I trust you. I don't know. I'm not sure. I try it. You prove trustworthy. I survive the risk. How do you help people who are at that place where, man, they're just about ready to jump over that line to trust and they keep getting pulled back? They feel so isolated, as you mentioned earlier. What are some practical steps to get them across that line?
First off, I would extend the trust to them. Show them that you're willing to do so. And so trust them with something, whether it's a struggle you've gone through or something like that. Because when they realize that it's a mutual relationship, trust doesn't just flow one way, but it goes back and forth. I think that can help open them up to say, this person's entrusted me with something. I now can open up and entrust them more. And I think that really helps. And again, I've personally seen that where people have been open with me and told me stuff in confidence, and then you're able to build that, because when that person trusts you and you prove trustworthy, you can trust them to do the same.
I know this might seem like we were jumping all over the page, Matt. You know, we talked about a chapel you did. We talked about where you are now. We talked about a couple of cases and, you know, in your business. We talked about business encouragement for leaders and what they can do. And, you know, we talked about personal application of what we can do. So, you know, college students are listening to this podcast today. Man, they're weighted down, and you defend college students. You know, you're doing some of that yourself right now. For that person who doesn't really know how to deal with the internal pressure of feeling that they need to respond, to defend a voice, to defend somebody, what steps would they take in being able to be an agent of change right now? Not waiting until they get a job with a degree on the wall, but right now to become agents of change. Any suggestions on that?
First thing is having a strong conviction about the truth, that it's got to be the thing that says, what I believe, what the Bible says is the absolute truth. It's the absolute word of God, and there's nothing to be ashamed of in proclaiming that. I think that's one of the big struggles. We work with a lot of college students that are being attacked for their faith on campus, having their clubs shut down because they're religious. And so many of them, the difference between the ones that are successful and the ones that cave in is always that true conviction about, I know this to be true and I'm not ashamed of it. It's I'm not ashamed of the gospel, you know, going back to some declarations from Paul. So I would encourage them, first and foremost, you've got to reach that place where you are confident of what you believe, that it's not a, I think it's this, but it's, I know that this is the truth. Because once you reach that absolute conviction about the knowledge of God and who he is and the plan for salvation, then when you are confronted on campus, when you're facing the pressure over your faith, you're going to stand true. But if there's that little bit of doubt or uncertainty, that's the enemy capitalizes on that and is able to silence, unfortunately, so many people through all of that. So that's really the big thing I think we need more of, is just that conviction of truth.
And one last question. You mentioned today, maybe not the last question, but nearing the last question, you mentioned, you know, that you yourself, you have a target on your chest, man. I mean, the kind of profession you're in, the business you're in, I mean, there's a target on your chest every day. And you told a story of your own life, of a day when the armor wasn't full.
Yeah.
And you challenged us today that when the target is on your chest and the arrow of the enemy is coming toward you, if there's the slightest crack in your armor. So how can people who might feel like today that there's a crack in their armor, what do they do to get that back in shape?
It really takes, I think, radical obedience to deal with that. The first thing I would say is, if you're aware of that, congratulations. There's a lot of people that aren't, that live in ignorance, to think they've got everything together and they realize they don't. And so having a self-awareness of what your flaws are, what your weaknesses are, where those gaps in your armor are is such a vital step. And the next part is, what do you need to do to fix it? You know, I told in mine that it required cutting off a lot of stuff, of internet access and other things. And I think everybody is going to see that. It may be relationships, it may be places you go, it may be a job you have. Whatever it is, you've got to identify that and say, I'm going to gouge it out. I'm going to cut it out, whatever it takes to do that. Mm-hmm. And because it's a process that we're going to spend our whole lives doing. As we deal with the one gap in our armor, God's going to reveal another. And it's that sanctification process, you know, we used to talk about. And we're doing it, and every time we're just slowly getting more and more of the gaps filled in. And when we do that, when we are faithful to God and pursuing that and making ourselves open to his discipline and his correction of us, then when the gaps that maybe we overlook are there, God's grace is going to be there to help defend us against those. But when we show those first steps and say, God, purify me, help me fill these in, I think God is going to always be faithful. His grace is going to be sufficient, that when the bullseye's on our back and the fiery darts are coming, his shield's going to be there to protect us.
And this is good for the preacher, the worship leader, the lawyer, the truck driver, the chef, you know, the person who owns business X, Y, or Z, you know.
Yeah.
This is for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Because we're made to be a reflection of God in a world of chaos.
Yeah. We were was meeting with a guy earlier this week. He owns a meat packing plant. I mentioned it in there. Devout Christian guy, and you think, what's a meat packer? What's faith matter there? But it very much, it animated everything he did, from how he treated his employees. One employee that was facing cancer, and he had every right to cut him from the insurance. The guy wasn't meeting the things. The good business decision would have been, cut the guy loose, save yourself some money. And he said, God told me, you keep that guy on there, and 8 years, that's the Christian influence. And but for that man following God, this other man would have probably been dead. And I think we de-emphasize how important our faith is to every profession we're called in, and that man was as much of a light as the pastor of the mega church.
Gotcha.
And we all have to make sure that our lives are in check so that we can be faithful to God no matter what our profession is.
Matt, thanks for joining us today. We're so delighted that you came, and I know that we're going to try to get you back to some classes and other events that we're having here on campus. Thanks for joining us on Studio 22 and listening to our chat today with Matt Sharp. We hope you'll join us again soon. And as always, remember, you're made for more. Go make a difference in the world for the cause of Christ. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.